Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Amud Aleph. We're in the middle of a Braita. The Braita is bringing down or comparing or contrasting the different Avot Nizakin that we have. The first part of the Braita was the comparison between Chomer B'Shor Mibabor. We compared the differences between Shor and Bor. As we mentioned here in the Braita, it's going to become clearer that the Shor that we're speaking about in the Braita here is Keren. Nezek of Keren because of the fact that the Braita says that it's not mu'ad mitchilato, which is not true by Shein Veregel. It also deals with kofar, which is only meaningful or relevant within the av of Keren. So now the Braita on the top of Yud Amud Aleph begins to compare chomer bishor mi be'ish. Chomer be'ish mi bishor. Shor has certain characteristics that are more chamur than ish. And ish has certain characteristics that are more chamur than shor. Chomer bishor mi be'ish. The areas where shor is more stringent than eish, shashor mishalem kofar. The shor, if it kills someone, it pays kofar the monies of atonement. Chayav b'shloshim shel eved. And in addition, if it kills an eved kenani, then it pays the fixed knas, or the fixed fine of shloshim. Nigmar dino asur bana, like we saw yesterday. Once it has a gmar din, the mitah, because it killed someone, then it is asur bana that we learned again, from the Balashor Naki, not only does Balashor Naki mean that he is not put to death for the activities of his shor, but Balashor Naki means Naki Minichasav. He is removed, or there's some sort of a disengagement between him and the property, which is that it becomes a sur Bahana'a at the time of the Gemar Din. Misaro, the Cheresh Shoteva Katan, Chayav. He gave over the shore to be watched by a Cheresh Shoteva Katan. He is Chayav. That we spent time in yesterday's daf discussing why he is Chayav in that case. Is the problem, as Tosfot says, that there's a Pshia in the Shmirah. These are people that cause problems in the Shmirah. Not only are they not a good Shmirah, but they also cause problems in the Shmirah. According to Rashi, maybe there was no proper Shmirah to start with, and the Cheresh Shoteva Katan, maybe they're additive, but they really don't suffice in terms of the Shmirah that you need. Mashein kein be'esh. None of this is true by Esh. As Rashi notes over here, with regards to Esh, if Esh kills, you are either patur or patur. You're either patur because the person wasn't tied up. He's not tied up. He's a human being. He has a good sense, choices to make, and he should have run away. The fact that he didn't run away makes it that you're not culpable for his death if Esh kills him. The other hand, if he's tied up, or somehow he is inhibited from running away, then you are chayav mita for it, and that's commonly the rabbi mine, and you wouldn't be chayav any tashlumim at all. It would simply be that you're subject to the death penalty there, because then you've killed someone. So therefore, the issue of a mishalem kofar is not relevant by Esh, because either you're patur because the person should have ran away, or you're patur because you're going to be held responsible for killing the individual. The issue of Masro L'Cheresh Shoteva Katan, we already discussed yesterday, which the Gemara was trying to figure out, why is Esh different than Shor and Bor? And the answer being that Esh requires some intervention on behalf of the Cheresh Shoteva Katan to create the problem or the nezek here. So therefore, when they are added in, the Cheresh Shoteva Katan, either you couldn't have anticipated that this would happen, or in a sense, you're not a posheya in that case, because the natural state or natural continuum of this item was to extinguish itself. Therefore, the Cheresh Shoteva Katan do not, by definition, make you chayav by Esh, and the Nigmar Dino Asur Bana is a unique din by Shor. Chomer ve'esh mishim be'shor. Esh has chumrot over Shor. Sha'esh mu'edet mitchilata. So here again, you see this idea that we're talking about Keren, because here Esh is called mu'ad to do damage immediately, which means that you are chayav, nezek shalem, immediately, as well as the fact that the shmirah, that's what Rabbeinu Tam said earlier, is upon you, meaning you have to be shomeret, because the assumption is that it will spread, versus the shor, which is shtam shvarim, are a bishmirah, in that normally shvarim don't go around doing damage. So you can assume that they are tame, domesticated, and you don't have to watch them every second. So that's mu'ad mitchilata. Mashein kein b'shor. Again, shor is a tam up front, or the way the Rabbeinu Tam expresses it, that it is self-shamur. It's self-guarded until it demonstrates behavior that indicates otherwise. Again, here, Tosafot raises the fact that how come you don't mention that Ishur is a Baal Chaim, that Ishur is a living being, whereas Eish moves, but it's not a living being, doesn't make its own decisions, rather it moves whatever the fuel is. He says that's already subsumed under Masro L'Cher Shoteh V'Katan. That's subsumed under Cher Shoteh V'Katan, because that is the difference between Ishur and Eish. The Eish's natural state is to extinguish itself, unless it is caused to move or to ignite. And therefore, that's why you're patur by the Chereshot Katan and the Eish. By the shore, you are chayav, because the natural state of the shore is to be a little mischievous to do these things. And therefore, the Chereshot Katan's guarding or shmirah there is insufficient, because it is a Baal Chai that makes its own decisions and does it, can move and do damage if it decides to leave or to break out of whatever shmirah that it's in. Tosafot already says that's subsumed in the differences that we said already. Chomer mi be'esh mi babor. Eish has chumrot over bor, v'chomer bor mi be'esh. And then bor has chumrot over eish. Chomer bor mi be'esh. The chumrot of bor over eish are shetchilat asiyato l'nezek. Its creation is made for nezek. And again, this doesn't mean that when you dig the bor, you're doing it to damage. But either, as we explained before, the existence of the bor is going to be dangerous because it's in the Reshut Rabim, or you should anticipate that a bor is going to create problems. And that's the natural state of a bor, is that it is dangerous, and that danger, therefore, makes it tchiyat asiyato l'nezek. Misaro l'cher shoteh v'katan chayav. If he gives it over to cher shoteh v'katan, he's chayav. This is what we discussed yesterday, that shor and bor are chayav in those cases, whereas Eish, Mashain came by Eish. Eish is not chayav in that case. And again, Eish isn't tchilat asiyato l'nezek. It is dangerous fire, but it doesn't inherently dangerous. It requires some either other fuel or other intervention in order for it to cause the problem. Whereas the existence of the bor itself can cause problems. Chomer be'esh mi babor. The stringencies of Eish over bor. She'esh darka lelech ulazik. And Eish moves and does damage, whereas the bor is stationary. Umu'edet lecho ben devar haraula, ben devar she'ein raula. Eish, it's indiscriminate. It consumes items that normally fuel a fire, but it also consumes things that aren't necessarily a firewood or fuel for the fire, just because of its mere existence or the heat that's created, or it's in its path, it destroys everything there. Mashen kein bibur, which isn't true by bor. The Gemara will ask, what is ra'uila, she'ein ra'uila, so I'm going to defer the discussion to that point. Mashen kein babor. By bor, that is not true. I'm also going to defer the discussion why bor, this is not true in a bor. V'litnei chomer b'shor mi babor. Why don't we add this in? Why is this missing from the braita? Which is that the shor has something over a bor. Sheshor chayav bo et hakelim, mashen kein babor. A shor, if it does damage to utensils, to people's property, you are chayav. That's not true by the bor, because we are going to darshan later on in the Masechta. Shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. That means that kelim that fall into a bor, or damaged by the bor, you are not held responsible for, you're not held liable for, it's a gzerat katuv. So therefore, that is another difference between them. Gemara says, Amani, Rabbi Yehuda, who's the author of this braita? Rabbi Yehuda, demechayev on this kelim, bor. He disagrees with the chachamim and says that you are chayav for kelim. And therefore, that would not be a difference between shor and bor. E Rabbi Yehuda, if it's Rabbi Yehuda, ema seifa. Then you have a problem in the latter part of the braita, which is chomer be'esh mi babor. Eish has this over bor. She'esh darka leilech ulazik. Umuad le'echol ben davar aruila, ben davar she'ein ra'uila. Eish has these two chumrot. One is that it moves, and that it can do damage through moving, and it's mobile, whereas the bor is stationary. And then it consumes indiscriminately, which the bor does not. Mashen kein babor. Why is it mashen kein babor? Devar haroila mai ninhu. What is something that is ra'oi for fire? So the answer is itzim. That's pretty straightforward. Fire or fuel for the fire is wood. So wood would be the natural thing that the fire consumes. Devar she'ein ra'oila. What is something that is not the natural consumption or fuel of the fire? Mai ninhu kelim. Those are kelim, meaning utensils, even though they will be burnt, even though they will be ruined by the fire, it's still, you don't throw in kelim as fuel for the fire or as firewood. Mashen came babor, which is not true by bor. Now, what the difference now would be is that by fire, you're chayav for kelim. By bor, you are patur for kelim. So kelim, even though not the natural fuel of the fire, you're still responsible for them. The bor, where kelim are not re'uyim, quote unquote, not because they can't be ruined there, but because the Torah says that a bor, you're not chayav for kelim. So, I, Rabbi Yehuda, ha'amart michayev ayev Rabbi Yehuda niske kelim babor. If you make Rabbi Yehuda the author of this braita, now you have a problem, because that difference between Eish and Bor doesn't really exist. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, Kelim and the Bor, you are Chayav. So then what's the difference between Eish, where you're Chayav for Kelim, and Bor, where you're Chayav for Kelim? El Olam Rabbonon hi. It's the Rabbonon. So that means that they disagree, and they say that Kelim, you are Patur in the Bor. So then for that latter piece of the Braita, where it says, what's the difference between Eish and Bor, that you can explain because of the Kelim. Kelim would be chayav by Eish, they'd be patur by bor. But then, why don't you have in the list, the other item which the Gemara was asking about is, why don't you say there's a difference between shor and bor? Shor, you're chayav for kelim. Bor, you are patur for kelim. How come that is not listed in the Braita? The Gemara answers, v'tana v'shier. The v'tana did not give you an exclusive list. There are things that are left out of the list, and the Gemara in a second will ask, what else was left out of the list? Now, so just to go back to address, now that we've done a little more here, to address some of these issues. First of all, in terms of ha-ra'uila ve'ein ra'uila, what's interesting here is that the Gemara says that when it comes to Eish, ra'uila are things that are naturally fuel for the fire. Things that are ein ra'uila are items that are not usually used as fuel for the fire. On the other hand, the bor is only ra'ui to destroy things that you are chayav for. So back on Daf Heyamud Bet, Rashi and Tosafot discussed this issue. And Rashi quotes this Gemara in essence and says, Eish, which is ra'oi to destroy all things. Bor is not ra'oi to destroy all things. So Rashi back there says, Davar shelo ra'oi the bor is Adam. So Rashi, instead of taking up Kelim like is mentioned in the Gemara here, he mentions Adam, because Adam is also excluded from the same Miutim, which is Shor v'lo Adam. Chamor velo kelim. So when Rashi says you want to balance between bor and eish, because there the Gemara says if you put every av together with bor, you can learn out all the other avot. So he says, well, eish consumes things that are ra'oi and ain't ra'oi. How does bor balance that out? Because bor only consumes things that are ra'oi. So when he says, what's not ra'oi? Adam. Because Adam you're not chayav for. Tosafot questions that and says, v'kasho chada lo patar Adam ela mimita. First of all, Adam is only patur if he dies in the bor. V'lo minizakim. But if he gets damaged in the bor, you are chayav. When we say shor v'lo Adam, we mean lemita. V'od. Ata mishum de patur Adam chashuv ein ra'oi. Wait a minute. Just because you're patur for Adam, does that make it ein ra'oi? V'alo be'esh patur tamun. Be'esh, we're going to see in a second that you're patur for tamun, which means things that are not visible. Things that are hidden. If the esh consumes them, you're not chayav. So does that make it ein ra'ui, just because you're patur from it? Over here you have a gzeirat ha-ketuv that says Adam is patur. Does that really mean that an Adam is not ra'ui to die in the bor? That's not true. The Adam could die in the bor, just you're not held responsible or accountable for it. You're not chayav. That's a gzeirat ha-ketuv. So Tosafot is bothered by that. Ela nira da Adam nami chashuv ra'ui the bor. Says Adam is chashuv ra'ui the bor. The ra'ui lamut, bahavlo. It's possible for the person to be killed by the hevel. What Tosafot is referring to here is a machloket Rav and Shmuel later on in the Masechta as to what causes the damage in the bor. There are two things that can cause damage in the bor. One is chavata, the impact of landing in the bor. The second one is havla, the air quality that is there in the bottom of the bor. There they argue about what is the primary problem in bor. Is it the impact from your falling? Or is it the hevel? If you say it's the havla, that it's the air quality there, the air quality could be a problem for Adam. And therefore, an Adam is ra'ui to be killed or even damaged by the bor. And therefore, Tosafot says that's not called ein ra'ui for the bor. On the other hand, aval kelim, which is what the Gemara uses over here as the example, chashiv le de kaman ein ra'ui. The Gemara, as he notes further on, maybe we're on Daf Hey, when he says this, is ein ra'ui. It's a lo maskalu havla. Air quality has no impact on the kelim. And then he goes on, even though if they're new kelim, maybe the air quality does impact them. impact could have an impact on them, but that's if you believe that that's what the problem with the boar is. But if you believe that the problem of boar is hevel, then there could distinguish between Adam, where he is ra'oi the boar, and Kelim, where you're not ra'oi the boar. For that reason, Tosafot disagrees, and he says that's why the Gemara brought the example of Ein ra'oi the boar to be Kelim, as opposed to what Rashi suggests back in Hayam Adbet, that Adam is the item that is not ra'oi the boar. So the Gemara says, Betana v'shir, that the list in the Braita was not exclusive, and it left out items. My shir, dai shir. This is the Gemara's question every time, which is, if the Braita only left out one thing, you better rethink your idea that he left things out. Because if there's only one item left out, that means that he intentionally left it out. If you have a number of items that he left out, then you can argue that it's not an exhaustive list. So the Gemara, whenever it makes a claim, Betana v'shir, that the Tana left out items from the list, the first question it will ask is, my shir to high shir. What else did it leave out that it left this thing out? The Gemara now is claiming that it left out this issue of kelim, which is, according to the Rabbanon, that by shor you'd be chayav for kelim, by bor you'd be patur for kelim. Why is that left out of the list? The Gemara says, because it's not an exhaustive list. What else was left out? Shir tamun. They left out Tamun. That's also not mentioned here in the Braita, which is that by Eish, you're not Chayav for Tamun. By Bor and Shor, you are Chayav Tamun. Tamun means things that are not visible, things that are covered up. Eish, you have a tour for that. Shor and Bor, you don't have a tour for that. So that's also left out of the list over here. Now Rashi gives you what is the example. Shir v'Tamun, Tavalei the Mitnei, Chomer b'Shor, Ubor mi b'Eish. If a shor kicked a sack full of kelim, b'shibram chayav, and he broke them, he's going to be chayav. Oh, im nafal chamor bebor, v'alav sak mlei tuvah, falls into the boar and he's got a whole package of tuvah on his back, chayav, he is chayav. V'af agav de tamun b'sak, even though they're encapsulated inside of this sack, mashen kim b'esh, which isn't true by esh. The limud is from oba kama. But kama means standing grains or standing wheat that is burnt up. So that you are chayav for, because kama is visible, kama is out in the open. Otherwise, things that are covered, you would be patur from. So that's differences left out of the Mishnah. Tosafot questions Rashi's example over here. He says, wait a minute. You're telling me that if you have a sack full of tvuah, or a sack full of kelim, if the shor kicks it, chayav. But if it falls into a boar, you also chayav. Wait a minute. Didn't we just establish that shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim? Well, if you're patur from kelim, you should also be patur for tvuah. He says, v'chein im nafal bor sak mlei tvuah chayav, velo dak. He says, that's not true. T'chol milei delav balei chayim, m'matim chamor. Chamor velo kelim comes to tell you that any inanimate object is patur in a boar. The boar, kamo kelim, kedamar b'sofa parag, gabi nafal boar, v'ivish me'mav, lachar nefila shu patur, shubtavi shor, boar, umayim kelim. It seems to be that water would also have a status of kelim. So what Tosafot says is, that when we say that you're patur from kelim, it doesn't just mean kelim, it means anything that is not an animate object, not a live being, that you are patur for in boar. And therefore Rashi's explanation is not a proper explanation for tamun over here. He doesn't give you an alternative. The other Rishonim, like the Tosfot, the Rabbeinu Peretz, I think, gives an example. If a behema, an animal, is in a sack, and then you throw the sack in there, then you have tamun that affects a live being. So that is a way that you could have it. Others make the distinction that you're making, which is that kelim is not necessarily to exclude all inanimate objects. It's coming to say that anything that's a utensil is excluded over here. But tvuah? Tvuah would not be classified as kelim, and you would be chayav for tvuah. That has to do with the Gemara later on, and how you interpret the Gemara later on, like Tosafot. So Rashi, either, as Tosafot says, lo dak, he wasn't so careful about it, but there are instances where you can come up that it would be chayav. Or Rashi fundamentally disagrees with Tosafot over here, and thinks that this would be chayav in tamun when tvuah falls into the boar. Okay, Ivai Tema, some say, lo olam Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Braita. And therefore, you don't have to worry about why did it not compare shor to bor, because you're chayav in kelim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Then how do you explain the case of Eish? We said Eish versus Bor, where Eish is Ra'ui La, Ein Ra'ui La, versus Bor, where it's only Ra'ui La. And the Kelim were the key or the pivotal difference there. So Davar Shein Ra'ui La, Lav La Tuye Kelim. No, you got it wrong. Davar Shein Ra'ui La is not Kelim, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kelim are maybe not Ra'ui La by Eish, but they are Ra'ui La by Bor. So Ela La Tuye, Lichka Niro, V'sichcha Avanav. Comes to exclude by fire, that fire also does damage in this way, but you might think that you're not chayav for it, which is the ground and the stones that are there that are affected by the fire, but they're not consumed by the fire. So you would have thought in the case where it's scorched earth or it singed the stones, in that case maybe you shouldn't be chayav because the physical properties are still there. They're intact, and so maybe that's not called something that's ra'oy le'esh. Nevertheless, you are held accountable for that. It hurts the field, I mean, it maybe destroys the upper layer of the field, takes out the nutrients, or you have to replow the field because it ruins the plowing of the field, it hardens the top of the field, it cracks the rocks, whatever the damage is that's done, you are responsible for, even though they're ein ra'ui la. They're really not items that are consumed by fire. So ra'ui la are things that are consumed by the fire. Ein ra'ui la are things that are not consumed by the fire, but you're still held responsible for. So that would be the case here of l'chicha nirov s'chicha banav. So that's the distinction between Bor and Eish. Eish consumes both Ra'oila and Ein Ra'oila. Ein Ra'oila now is not Kelim, but rather L'chicha Nirov S'cha Banav. Now you have to say that by Bor, you're not Chayav for that. What does that mean that you're not Chayav by Bor? Tosfot brings here that Rashi says, Gabi Dash Miniro, Gemara we're going to see in a second, that if the animal went into your field and stomped all over the field and ruined the plowed field, it was a nicely plowed field, the animal goes in there, stomps, and ruins the field. By boar, you can't claim that the boar does damage to the ground. In that a boar does damage to things that fall into it. It doesn't do damage to the ground itself. That this nir and avanim is not relevant by boar. When you say ein ra'ui la, by eish is consumed by a boar, the boar doesn't do damage to the rocks. The boar doesn't do damage to the plowed field. The boar is stationary. It can't do damage to these items. Vikasha, the Peirush Dimken Ayahola Skir Kama Ezekot, Sheesu Seba Davar Kavua, Shesarev Beito, Vishar Dvarim Akvuim. Eish travels. So by definition, it can damage things that are not movable or don't move. A boar which is stationary, the only things that can be damaged by a boar are items that move to the boar and be damaged by the boar. Ella. Yesh lomar, lichka niro, dechayav, afopi she'en rigilot, she'tazik eish nir, vavanim klau, mashen kein babor, bapachot miyud, potur mimita, kevin de'en rigilot amit, bapachot miyud. So Tosfot over here says, no, the difference will be that, even though eish is not the regular things that it consumes in terms of the rocks and the field, nevertheless you're held accountable by bor, if you're less than 10 tfachim deep, and something dies in there, you're patur legamre. In that, even though it's not ra'oi to die there, if it does die there, you're not held accountable for it. It does have a shame bor l'nezakin, doesn't have a shame bor l'mita. That's the point. That there can be a bor, that's a bor l'nezek, but not a bor l'mita. And in that case, you will be chayav for a nezek and not chayav for mita. Because mita is not ra'oi for this bor. So it's not ra'oi for the bor, you won't be chayav. And that distinguishes it. You could argue on Tosafot's Shita based that it's not called a bor lemita. It's not a bor lemita. You've taken away the definition, and therefore maybe it doesn't damage in that way. Other Rishonim say what you want to say, which is, when you dig a bor, you could cause foundation damage to other things that are adjacent to it. It can do damage for, the land can collapse inward, meaning that there are ways that a bor could do damage to earth or stationary objects, and therefore maybe what Rashi says isn't necessarily true. Just because you dug a bor doesn't mean that you can't bor doesn't do damage to the land around it. All right, so now the Gemara continues. Matkif la Ravashi. Ravashi says there are other things. Litnei chomer b'shormi b'bor. Matkif la Ravashi. Litnei chomer b'shormi b'bor. We have another chomra b'shor of a bor. Shashor chayav bo shor psulei mukdashim. If a shor does damage to another shor that was psulei mukdashim, you would be chayav for that. Mashen kein b'bor. That for the bor would not be true. So Psulei HaMikdashim is an animal that was made Kodesh to be put on the Mizbeach. It gets a mum in it. Since it gets a mum, it's no longer Ra'oi the Mizbeach. You can redeem that animal. That's called Psulei HaMikdashim. When you redeem the animal, it's chulin, and you can use it to eat, and you can use it for certain items. There are limitations on psulei mikdashim. You can't use it for certain activities. Again, it's not important to our sugya over here, but there are certain limitations with regards to it, one of which is you're not allowed to feed it to the dogs, which is that by psulei mikdashim, it's vachalta. You can eat it, but you can't feed it to the dogs. If the animal dies, it's a nevela. It's a nevela. It can't be eaten by human beings. It can only be eaten by animals. They becomes a surbana. The carcass becomes a surbana because you can't do anything with it. You can't feed it to the dogs, and if humans can't eat it anymore, it becomes a surbana. So now, by boar, the nezek of boar, it says, vamet yelo. It says, when the animal falls in it, then a mate yelo, the mate will be for him. By psulei mikdashim, that can't be the case. Because a mate ELO, you can't get any benefit. You can't get any monetary benefit out of the mate. And so therefore it's excluded from the damages of boar. An animal that falls into a boar that's psulei mikdashim and dies there, you will not be chayav for it because you cannot accomplish a mate ELO. Since you can't be accomplish a mate ELO, you're patur from nizke boar. A shor, the damage is a shor of psulei mikdashim. We said before, shor re'eyu velo shor shalakdesh. Well, psulei mikdashim are shor re'eyu. He's allowed to eat it. It is his animal. It is considered to be shor re'eyu. So you will be culpable for damages done by a shor to psulei mikdashim. You will not be culpable if it falls into a boar and dies. So that distinction should have been mentioned in the braita here. Shor, you're chayav if it does damage to psulei mikdashim. Boar, you are patur. By the way, that was earlier on when we discussed the turim for hekdesh. That was one of the turim that Tosafot brought down, is that if you're patur for psulei mikdashim, certainly you're patur for hekdesh. And that was one of the three sources that Tosafot quoted for the fact that by hezek in general, when you do it to hekdesh, you are patur. Because we have shor re'eyu, we have by the boar, psulei mikdashim are turim, certainly hekdesh is patur. And then we brought one other example by a truma, damaging truma. And Tosafot says, from amongst those items, you see that by damage to hekdesh, you are patur. Iyamart bishlama rabbanan hi. If it's rabbanan, either the shir hach, sharin ami hach. When we established that the braita was the rabbanan, we said that it left certain items out. So if let out already this some items, this could be amongst those items that are left out. It's not an exhaustive list. Iyamart Rabbi Yehuda. Here, when you gave the alternative that Rabbi Yehuda is the author, and in that case, we said it didn't leave anything out because kelim for Rabbi Yehuda are chayavin. And then we explained the braita about Ish, how it could be even according to Rabbi Yehuda versus Bor. My shear, the high shear. What else was left out of the braita that this is also left out of the braita for Ravashi? Shear dash biniro. It left out the case where the animal goes and stomps all over the field. So dash biniro, as Rashi says, shim dash ashor biniro, nitkaven lekach. An animal intentionally goes into a field and stomps all over the field that was plowed and ruins the field. It's not that he's just walking there and he walked through it. That'd be a damage of rego. Here he's going in there and he's doing bekavanah. He's intentionally doing this. Shari, why would an animal do that? Why would a shor go into a field and stomp around? So he says, Rashi explains this. Shari ashvarim melumadim bidisha. That's what they're taught to do. They use the animals to thresh the grains. How do they do that? They go and they stomp on the grains. So the animal is trained to stomp. So it just goes into a field and it uses that same talent. Just happens to be that there's no grain there. It's doing it on the field itself, and it's ruining the field. So therefore, it's a toladada keren. Shehi kavanata lazik. Over there, it's intending to do it. Like it does it when it threshes. It's not just walking through the field. It intends to stomp around like it does when it's threshing. V'chayev neshalem, demei niro, shekil kel. You have to pay for the ruining of the field. Mashenkein bebor. That's not true by bor. De lo shayich behezek karka. Because there's no relevance of damage to the karka. And that's where Tosafot already asked before about, wait a minute, is that enough of a reason to say that you are patur because it's not relevant? Just because you're not relevant doesn't mean that you are patur. Is it really possible to create a comparison between something that is relevant and something that is not relevant? That's what we said before. Rashi explained that Mashen came before, Lo Shayach Behezek Karka. Hezek Karka doesn't have application by bor. So Rashi is claiming that in both of these cases, the reason that boar, you would be patur here is because this whole type of damage is not relevant. Tosafot says that may not be a reason to say that there's a difference between them. If a certain type of damage is not relevant, then how can you compare and contrast something? I can say, oh, this is chayav and this is patur, when that type of damage can't be created or can't be simulated in the other av nizikin. That's not a chumrah, it's just a practical problem where that doesn't exist for that. And that's why we saw before, Tosafot differentiates or tries to come up with other answers as to why the bor is patur, or the cases where bor would be patur, bor would be chayav, because he wants to have a case that's relevant by bor, that also you find that the bor is patur. Because that way, there is a comparison or a proper comparison between them. Gemara says, "Im shom dash biniro lav shiurahu." Dash bino is not left out. Tatana shekein darkol elech ulazik. It's subsumed under that category, which is that it does this type of damage. Shifarim have the ability through their movement, through their feet, to do damage, and therefore it's subsumed under this category. This is what we said in the Mishnah, which is, if you facilitated a portion of the damage, you are responsible for the entire damage that is done. I want to know, Tara Banan, I am responsible for, in that case, since I facilitated a portion of the Nezek, I'm responsible for the entire Nezek as if I did the whole thing myself. Ketzat, what is an example of that? A chufer bor tisha. Somebody came along and dug a bor that was 9 tfachim deep. Ubacher vishlimo la'asara. Then another guy comes along and finishes off the bor and makes it 10 deep. Acharon chayav. The latter party is chayav. Udalo kirabi. And that's against the position of Rabbi. Now, as Tosfos points out over here, when we say acharon chayav, gama nizakin. He's also chayav, not only on the mita, but also on the nezek. Rishon patur mikulam. The first guy is completely exonerated over here. He has no responsibilities. So that says Rashi notes the same thing. Ben Beitbo is short, Ben Huzak. What you're saying here is that when you create the bor, when you dig the bor down to 10 tfachim, you've now changed the status of the bor. Before this point in time, the bor could do damage. After this point in time, when you dig it down to 10 tfachim, not only can it do damage, it can kill. It's a bor of mita. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that when you dig down to the 10th tefach, you become responsible for the bor, not only because you now made it into a bor of the mitah, but now you take over as the balim of the bor. You become the owner of the bor. The bala bor, according to this, is the one who makes it into a bor of the mitah. And therefore, you become the owner of the bor in the sense of responsibility. And therefore, if any damage or any death happens in this bor, you as the latter party will be chayav. The former party is now out of the picture completely, and you're not chayav at all. And that's what brings the reason for this is, v'ameiti elo. The mate belongs to the person who dug the bor down to the point of mita. So therefore, ameiti elo makes him the technical owner of the bor. If he's the owner of the bor, once he brings it to a shir mita, he's responsible for everything. The Gemara says it's not like Rabbi, the Tanya. Chler bor tisha, uba cher v'yishlimo. Someone digs a bor that is 9 tfachim deep, and then someone comes and finishes it la'asara. Acharon chayav, the latter party is chayav. Rabbi Omer, achar acharon the mita, achar shnehem the nizakin. That in terms of mita, you're right. The last guy caused the boar to be able to kill. So therefore he's fully responsible, fully and solely responsible for anything that dies there. But when it comes to nezek, over there we say shnehem the nizakin, it's joint liability. They both contributed to the boar that's here. Since they both contributed, they are both responsible for the nezek that is done over here. As opposed to the chachamim who say that you're even responsible for the nezek that happens over here. If Papa Amar, the mita uledivri akol, if Papa says, maybe our Mishnah, when it mentions this, or the Braita that mentions this, is authored by everybody, and it's talking about a case of mita. As far as mita is concerned, you only did a small portion of the digging over here, but you are now held completely responsible for everything that happens. The first guy dug the 9 tefachim. You only dug 1 tefach. But yet you are fully responsible for the mita that happens here. That's both according to Rabbi and the Chachamim. So if you set it up that way, then it can be divrei akol. If on the other hand, ika damre lema deloka Rabbi. So some say that you said it this way. Let's say our Mishnah is not like Rabbi. Amar papa the mita v'divrei akol. No, you can explain our Mishnah even according to Rabbi to say that it has to do with death. And even Rabbi agrees there that even though you only did a small portion, you are fully responsible for it. By Nizakim, there we argue about joint liability as to whether are you held accountable in that case. According to Chachamim, by Nizakim, the guy who makes it to bor the mitah becomes the owner of the bor. And therefore, he is chayav. Whereas Rabbi says that you're the owner of the boar for the part that you created. If you created it, the mitah, you're responsible for the mitah. The guy who created it for nizakin, he's responsible for nizakin. You added on to that, you're now jointly liable for that nezek that is being done. What happens in a case where the boar was already 10 tefachim deep, and the guy comes along and adds another tefach to it? Did he do anything of significance? Did he change the boar? Does that make him culpable in this case? Tosafot later on the Yamud Bet says, "Halo dami el lechad shechover boar yud uba acher mishlemo yud aleph." There, Tosafot implies that if you move it from yud to yud aleph, you haven't done anything of significance, and therefore we can't hold you accountable because the boar did the same damage as it did before. Implied in the Tosafot, and he mentions it earlier, "Echad achokek boar yud uba acher mishlemo esrim." If somebody did it 10, and then somebody did it, extended it to 20, and then somebody extended it to 30, over there, each one of them will be jointly liable over there because the deeper or the significant deepening of the boar does change the character of the boar. So Tosafot gives you the two extremes. He doesn't give you what's in between. He says, look, if you double the size of the boar, it's clear that you're also liable over here. If you only add on a tefach, then we're not going to make you liable over here. That distinction Tosafot already makes and says that to be jointly liable or to have some sort of contribution in the negligence of the boar, you have to do something that's significant enough to make a difference. Now that significance could be halachic, which is that when you go from 9 to 10, there's a difference between nezek and mitah, and that then makes you responsible for it, fully responsible for it, because you've changed the dynamic of the boar. Or that significance can be because you've really changed the dynamic of the boar by doubling the size of the boar. That's also something that's significant enough to make you liable. If you do something insignificant, then we have questions as to whether, and that's what you're asking, which the Tosafot doesn't address, is how much do you have to do in order to become liable? Tosafot also notes that in a case where most of the contribution is done by one of the parties, then it's clear there that even Rabbi would agree that there would be responsibility placed on the party that did most of the work. So if someone dug a boar that was 3 tefachim deep, and then you dug 7 tefachim, even Rabbi would agree in that case that you are the majority contributor to the problem or the boar mitah. The case where Rabbi disagrees is where the other 9 tefachim were made by this individual, and then you just added on 1 tefach. So in that case, it's good enough for mitah, but for nizakim, it remains the joint liability of the two parties. On the other hand, if you're the majority of the problem, again, there, we may not say that there's joint liability. The Moda Rabbi Acharon Chayav ben the Mitah ben the Nizakin, Tosfot says, because Ein Zeh Mikzat Nikso, the Acharon Avad Hakol, the other guy did most of it, or he did the majority of it, and therefore, Tosfot never gives you the threshold, but he does say that you have to look at the contribution to the problem here in terms of liability, even according to Rabbi, who says they're jointly liable. If the majority or all of the nezek is really created by the second individual, then we'll put the entire blame on him and exonerate the first individual. Whereas the Meiri suggests in that case, they would be jointly liable based on the percentage of the boar that they contributed to. And therefore, in that case, they'd both be chayav, even though the majority was contributed by one of the two parties. Rav Zinsky wants to distinguish here between the Shita of the Chachamim and Rabbi. Because the Shita of the Chachamim is premised on the fact that whoever is the Bala Bor, the Mitah, becomes the Bala Bor. So once you cross over the threshold of 10 Tfachim, you become the Bala Bor. After that point in time, you can't change that ownership anymore because you are the Bala Bor, the Mitah. Once you're the Bala Bor, the Mitah, then somebody coming in and doing anything after that is not significant. According to Rabbi, that there is no halacha, that just because you became the Bala Bor, the Mitah, that you automatically are the Bala Bor for the Nizakim as well. No, the Nezik remains independent and you're jointly liable for that. Over there, he wants to say that if you added on to the Bor, according to Rabbi, you would be Chayav. Because every incremental damage or change in the Bor that you create, you would be Chayav for. Because there's no definition of who is the Bala Bor, according to Rabbi. So he draws such a distinction. Again, the Bali at Tosafot talk about significance. That even within the sheet of the Chachamim, where once you make it the mitah, you become responsible, so the guy making 11 shouldn't matter, he says that's only true when it's a small increment. But if you have large increments, then you would be held accountable because it's too significant what you did. Vatuleka. Are there no more instances? So now, this is a strange question. The Mishnah gave you a principle, and now we gave an example of that principle. So the Gemara goes, vatuleka, are there no more concepts like this or no more examples like this? Maybe there are. Why does that detract from what we said before? Why is it significant that you're saying betuleka? So many of the Mishnayim point out here, Tosafot points it out, which is that v'yesh lomar mishum de dochik luklei matnitan to go karabi okara papo lemita. Our explanation in the Mishnah is somewhat narrow. Either we're saying it's only according to the Chachamim and not according to Rabbi, or we're saying that it's only in a case of mita. The fact that you have to set up the Mishnah in that narrower case already means that the example that you're giving is not the strongest example to fit into the Mishnah. Therefore, if we could find other examples, maybe they would be better examples to be the items that are covered by this case in the Mishnah. And that's the nature of the question over here. It's not looking for this exhaustive list of every case that would fit into this, but rather it's looking for a case that would fit into the Mishnah that's simpler than the case that we brought, which has all of these problems, that either it's a machloket, or it's only in the case of mitah, then you can get it to be divrei hakol. That is a narrowing of the cases or the instances where it's relevant to our Mishnah. So that's why it says, v'tul ha'ika v'ha'ika. Masar shoro l'chamisha b'nei adam. A person gives over his shor to five people to watch. U'pasha bo echad, man. And one of them was a posheya. Ve'ezik, and then the shor goes out and does damage. Chayav. He is responsible. Hey chidami. What's the case here? Ilei medvalav iu lovi mintar. If, that when he walks away, he is the cause of the lack of shmirah over here. Pshita deyu kavit. Of course he's chayav over there because he is the responsible party that made the shor ois shamur. Which is that until this point it was guarded. When he walks away from it, he's the one who causes the shor now to go out and do damage. Of course he's going to be held accountable. Elvilav iu nami mintar. If in the case where he walked away, the other four guys kept the shor under watch, and therefore there was no problem. When he walked away, there wasn't a lack of shmirah. Micah Ovid. What is he doing in that case? What did he do wrong? Rashi says something amazing. Rashi says, Micah Ovid, and therefore he is patur legamre. Rashi suggests over here that this individual made no contribution whatsoever to the problem, and therefore he'd be patur legamre. Other Rishonim say, Micah Ovid means that he's not solely responsible for the problem, he's jointly responsible, because they were sure was given over to all five of them. When he walks away, then it does damage, he's still responsible like the other parties here, because they are all joint shomrim of the animal. So even though when he left, it was left fully covered, but when something goes wrong, they're all going to be held responsible for that. So many Rishonim disagree with Rashi and say, Micah Ovid means that he's not patur legamre, but he is not, should not be held solely liable for the problem. Rashi on the other hand said, Micah Ovid is, he's patur legamre. So therefore, that can't be the case here, because in that case, either he's fully chayav because he's the problem, or he's, according to Rashi, fully patur because he's not the problem, or he's jointly liable with everybody else. But that's not a case where you contributed something small, and then you became fully responsible for all the damage that's done there. Because either you were fully responsible for the problem, or you were not responsible at all, and then you're just jointly liable with the other people. That's not an example like our Mishnah. Matkiv lo Rav Sheshet, Vayika, Marbe Bechavila. That he added on additional bundles of twigs. Okay, so if you look in the Rabbeinu Chanano at the bottom, he says, what is this Marbe Bechavila? Perish Marbe Bechavilot, Marbe Bechavila Yitzim, L'chazek HaDleika. He's adding fuel to the fire. Literally, fuel to the fire. The Rambam, on the other hand, when he brings this down in Niskei Mamon, says the case is that when they were putting loads on an animal. So the people were loading things on the animal, and you put on the last thing on the top of the animal, the straw that broke the camel's back. So the animal died after that doing working. It died from the load that was on it. So over there, the Rambam says, that's what's Marbe Bechavila. So Echidami, again, the Gemara says, what exactly is the situation? Ibidalabi ulo azlo. If without him, fire wouldn't have moved. Or, according to the Rambam, Pshita, then of course, here he would be fully chayav, because if without his fuel, the fire wouldn't have moved, then of course he's responsible for the fact that the fire did the damage, because he caused the fire to move. And if it wasn't for him that the animal wouldn't have collapsed, then of course he's fully chayav, because he put on the straw that broke the camel's back. Ella, deblaviu azlo. If you tell me that the fire would have moved without him, meaning that the fire would have spread even without him, or that, according to the Rambam, the animal would have collapsed under the weight or died anyway without his load on it, then my Covid, again, what did he do wrong? And Rashi again here says, Enu Chayav Klum. He's not Chayav whatsoever. The Rambam actually brings down the Locha just like Rashi, which is that you are Patur the Gamre, whereas the Tosafot, the Rashba, and the other Rishonim believe that when you're patur, it doesn't mean patur the gamri. It means that you are jointly liable, but you're not fully responsible for it. And Tosafot makes the same point he made with regards to bor, with regards to eish. If a guy, there's a massive fire and he throws something into that massive fire, it's clear that he's not jointly responsible for that because the fire was existed, would have continued without him. Just because he threw something into an eish gedolah doesn't make him responsible. And that's similar, as Tosafot said, to the case where you move a bor from 10 to 11. That's not a significant enough change to make you fully responsible. But if your fuel caused the fire to spread, or your digging of the bor significantly changed the bor, then in those cases you are responsible and you would be culpable for the damage that is done. The Gemara says, Matki Flora of Papa, Ba'ika Hadatan, don't we have another case? This case in the Braita. Five people sat down on a single bench. Below Shavrua. They didn't break it. Ubacher, last guy comes, sits on the bench, and he broke it. Acharon, Chayav, he is responsible. The sixth guy who sat down on it, it broke when he sat on it, and now he's held responsible for it. Valmer Rapapa, Rapapa qualifies this. Gagon Papa Baba. This is only true in a case like Papa Baba. As we're going to see in the remainder of the Gemara, Papa Baba was a very large person. And because of that, the bench collapsed. Heichidami. Again, here, what's the case? If you're going to tell me without this sixth guy getting on the bench would have been fine. It's just because the sixth guy got on the bench, it collapsed. Pshita, that he's chayav, because he's the one who caused the collapse of the bench. The bench would have been fine with the five guys on it. He jumps on it, the bench collapses, he's the one who caused the damage. He's the full facilitator of the damage, and he's fully chayav. That's not the case in the Mishnah. Elod b'laviyu nami itbar. If you tell me it would have broken without him anyway, my kovid. In the end, what did he do? Either according to Rashi's patur the gamre, he didn't contribute anything here, or according to the other Ishanim, he's jointly liable like the other people. Sof sof, matnita, heichem etarzo. How do you explain the braita? The Gemara here takes a different tack than it did in the previous two cases. In the previous two cases, they were brought by Amoraim, and they were just logical cases. They made up a case and said, this case would fit the billing. The Gemara says, no, it doesn't, because it fails because of this or fails because of that. The Gemara then doesn't ask, well, then how do you explain the case? Because the case was made up to start with. The difference here is the Tanya. We brought a Braita down. So we say, okay, the Braita does not fit the billing of our Mishnah, which is that you did something where you facilitated a portion of the damage and you're fully responsible, because either you were the cause of the damage and that's why you're fully responsible, or you were not the cause of the damage and therefore you're not responsible to Rashi, or according to the Baalei HaTosafot, since you were a contributor, therefore you are Chayav like all the other five people that are there before. But that's not the case of our Mishnah. But then the Gemara says, Matnita Eichem Etartzdom. How are you going to explain the Braita? In this case, you can't just say, it doesn't fit our Mishnah. You still have to explain in the Braita why this guy is Chayav over here. Why is number six solely Chayav? And if you tell me just because he destroyed it, then that's not a Chiddush to tell me that if the sixth guy comes and he causes it to collapse, that he's Chayav. Of course he's Chayav. He's the one who caused the thing to fall apart. So it has to be some Chiddush that five people sat down on it, and then the sixth guy came, and he's the cause of the problem. Without him, the bench would have collapsed in 2 hours. And over here, it got destroyed in 1 hour. He accelerated the problem. They can say to him, if it not for you, we would have been able to enjoy the bench a little longer, and it would have stayed intact. It would have been full. I mean, basically, we could have gotten another hour's worth out of this bench before it collapsed. And you accelerated the problem, so we lost an hour's worth of sitting on the bench. So why doesn't he say to them, without you guys, if it was just me, it wouldn't have broken. So you guys should have gotten up when I sat down. When I sat down and you thought it was going to get broken earlier, it was going to cause a problem, then you guys should have got up. You are just as liable, or you are just as contributory to the problem here, is because if you knew that when we added the last guy onto the bench, it accelerated and it would have destroyed it faster, get up. If you don't get up, then you're responsible, just as responsible as I am for it. He leaned on them and then it broke. He lays across them. Because when he sits on them, when he lays on them, five guys are sitting on the bench and this guy then lays on them. They can't get up. So now the problem is, or why he's liable over here, is because they can't get up. The Gemara says, Pshita. Of course he's chayav. If they can't get up, and he's the only one with the choice not to get up, then he's clearly the one who contributes to the problem over here, because without him, it wouldn't have accelerated the damage. And with him, it did damage it. The other parties, you can't argue you should have gotten up, because they could get up. He was lying on top of them. All right, so pshita, ma'u detema, kocho lav kigufo dami. I would have thought over here, his koach is not considered like his goof. And it's clear if a person damages with his body, that damage he is responsible for. What about kocho? The strength that comes out of him. Now, this is a different type of kocho over here. It's not your standard type of kocho, which is when you throw something. And that's your koach that's doing something. But rather, his weight that is leaning on these individuals, that kocho are you held responsible for. Like Mar says, kamash v'lan, to kocho kugufo dummy. That's exactly what this bright is teaching you, that here when he laid on top of them, kocho kugufo dummy, and therefore he's held accountable for laying on them, even though he didn't do it directly with his goof, but rather it's his weight that is causing them not to be able to get up, and that caused the damage over here. That's enough to make you liable in this case. Just like if anything that is goof, if it had done damage, you'd be held responsible. So too, when your koach does that damage, you're also going to be held responsible in this case. Okay, so now the question you have to ask about this case is, how come Rav Papa said the case is only true by Papa Bar Abba? How come the case is only true by Papa Bar Abba, who is a heavy set individual? And it seemingly Rav Papa Bar Abba was another Rav Papa who was in the generation of Rav Papa, and they were close. Seems like that they had some relationship between them. And Rav Papa says it's Kohen Baba Bar Abba was a large man. The Gemara also says that, I think, about Rav Yochanan, that Balbasar Abba, that he was a very large individual. And Rashi notes that about Papa Bar Abba over here. So that seemingly is a contribution or a necessary qualification in this case. And that's what Tosafot wants to understand here. Why do you need a Papa Bar Abba in this case and not any regular individual? So Tosafot on the previous Amud says, Mefarish Rashbam, the Nakat Papa Bar Abba, the fee, Shalastamine Adam, who Sha'ul. When a person puts out a bench in the public venue or on his property near the public venue, he's basically saying that anybody who wants to sit on this bench can sit down. That is the default status of a bench, is that you expect people to sit down on it. So if you put out a bench, you can expect people to sit on it. Therefore, if regular people sit on it and the bench collapses, then you can call it Meita Machmat Malacha. It was doing what it was supposed to do. And then it collapsed and died in its process of work, and these people would not be responsible for it. On the other hand, if a Papa Baba Shu Mishuneh Vikaved Mishar Bnei Adam, he is unusually large than other people. Stama Ein Sha'ulo. It's as if the bench is not open to him. Means that there's some limit which says, you know, when you go in an elevator, when you go in certain mechanical items, it says that there's a weight limit on these mechanical items. So to over here, the safsal has a weight limit on it. If you're below that weight limit, then the safsal is open to your use. If you use it and it happens to break, that's expected wear and tear. That's the natural course of the bench. As long as you didn't do anything unusual besides sitting on it, you're not going to be held responsible. Other than someone like Papa Baba, who is very large, and therefore his weight exceeds the weight limit that is allowed to use the bench, he will be held accountable because it's not lent to him for that purpose, because he's just too big to use the bench. When you're talking about kiddie chairs, when you have small chairs and adults sit in the kiddie chairs, again, that's where you are using it when it's not miuchad, it's not its natural or default status to be used in that way. So that's what the Rashi says is why the Gemara went out of its way to say Papa Baba, is because that's why he's held liable here, because only someone like Papa Baba will be held liable. Regular people would not be held liable. If the bench is fit for six, and six people sit on it and it breaks, according to this, you would not be chayav, according to the Rashbam. Really? Because you didn't do anything wrong. You used the bench the way it's supposed to be used, and it broke. That's meita machmat malacha. If there's a weight limit, and then the sixth guy brought it over the weight limit, then it's a serious issue. But the way that the Rashbam is terming it is that the bench is open to the public as long as you are below this threshold of weight. If you weigh more than that, then the bench is not made to handle you. And therefore, if you sit on it, you're negligent or you are responsible for the fact that the bench broke. So then, based on that, he says that the Rashbam Paskin Alocha, Mitokach Patar Arba Bnei Adam Sheyashvu Al Safsal Echad Shel Amanah V'Shavrua. It's a case in the time of the Rashbam where this Amanah had a nice bench out front, four guys sat on it, and the bench broke. And the Rashbam said they're pturim because the bench is purpose is for seating. These four people sat on it, did nothing wrong, nothing unusual. And therefore when it broke machmat, meita machmat melacha. And even though they are shoel, and shoel is chayav for everything besides meita machmat melacha, because he's supposed to be using it. So if you're using it in the way that's normal to use it, that's called meita machmat melacha, you're not chayav. But it says there, Rav Rabbeinu Azriel chayev l'shalem. Rabbeinu Azriel disagreed with the Rashbam and says you are chayav. Rabbeinu Tam Mefaresh, the Rashbam's brother, the Rabbeinu Tam, gives a different explanation over here. The nakat papar ba'aba mishum dekamar b'maskana. Now the conclusion of the Gemara was the kocho kegufo dami. That your weight has the same din as your goof, as if you did the damage directly. Dafka papar ba'aba shu adam kaved. That's only true when you have a certain amount of heft to you. Do we consider that weight to be kocho, mitoch kovdo mon am la'amod. Because of his weight, they couldn't get up. So you only say kocho kegufo when you have a certain amount of heft that your koach or your weight has impact like your goof. About shar b'nei adam she'en kvedim kolkach ve'en smichatam me'akev me'lamod. Other people, when they lay on top of other people, that's not so heavy. And that doesn't really stop them from getting up. Inu namu pashu shalom du. They are responsible because they didn't get up. Lufizet tzarech lamar de rapapa atzmo balatareitz mashik shah betuleka. If that's the case, rapapa is answering the question itself of betuleka. Why is this case not included here? Case is not included here because this case is different. Because this is unique to the case of papa ba'aba. A normal person who sat here, they would all be jointly liable. Papa ba'aba is responsible here because he becomes the sole responsible party because he's so heavy that he is the one who's koko kegufo. And because it's koko kegufo, that's why he's held responsible over here, not because he made a partial facilitation of the damage, and therefore he's held fully liable for it. So that's what Tosafot explains why Papa Ba'aba is important to this case. Either because the way that the Rashbam explains it is that the bench is not right away for him, he's over the weight limit. Or, according to Rabbeinu Tam, because that's the only time we would invoke the principle of kocho gufo, is when his gufo is significant enough that it's that koach has impact. Rav Soloveitchik suggests that the machloket here between the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu Tam revolves around whether the tour of meita machmat melacha is only applicable by a shomer, where the damage happens memela, where it happens by itself. So it's a tour that says you're an ones, and therefore you are patur. Or can we invoke meita machmat melacha even in a case where biyadayim you did the nezik, like here where you sat on the bench, and that caused the meita machmat melacha, is that still a ptur over here? The Rashbam says yes. The Rabbeinu Tam says no, that ptur only applies to a shomer, where it happens memela, not in a case where it's hezek biyadayim, where you're sitting on the bench and it collapses. Gemara says, v'tuleka. Aren't there other cases? Vayika. I have another example. Adetanya. V'brayta. Iku asara b'nei adam v'eser maklot. Asara b'nei adam. 10 people. With 10 different staffs, ben bevat achat, whether they did this simultaneously, ben bezechar zeh, where they did it sequentially, umate, and they died, kulan pturin. All of those individuals are patur. Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateir omer, bezechar zeh, when it's sequential, acharon chayav, mineshi kirevet mitato, because he brought the death forward. This is actually a machloket, as Rashi notes in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, there's a gzeret ha-katuv, which the Chachamim say that you're only responsible if you are the party that causes the death of the individual, not when you're the party that causes a portion of the death of the individual. So therefore, it says, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, ki yakeh kol nefesh adam k'tiv, demashma kol duhu. It says, ki yakeh kol nefesh adam, Rabbi Yehuda says kol duhu. Any mita that you cause, you are responsible. Mr. Rabbeinu Savar, kula nefesh mashma. That you have to totally kill them. So we don't know who killed him. So according to the Rabbanan, you're only responsible if you're the one who actually killed him. It's not if you just contributed or you put him over the edge, but if you did the mita, you caused the mita, you are the one responsible for that mita. The problem is here, we can't identify that person because we don't know who did it. Tosafot says that they all have to be giving death blows. Because if they're not all giving death blows, it's clear that the one who gave the death blow is the one that is chayav. They have to give a hit that is significant enough to kill him, even though he doesn't die, but it's significant enough that it could have killed him. But since they all did their death, 10 did it together, or they did it one after the other, they're not going to be held accountable because there is, we'll call it no joint liability by the killing of the individual, because it's called nefesh. You have to have killed the one who kills the nefesh. You have to be the one who actually kills the one who does it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says As long as you're the one who finishes them off, the smallest amount, then you're the one responsible. So therefore, Bavat Achari agrees, I don't know who the guy is, when they did it simultaneously. But Bezer Chazer, you know he died after the 10th guy hit him. So the 10th guy is the one who finished off that last, whatever, sign of life in him. So therefore, he is Chayav. But here the Gemara says, here I have a case where the person's not fully facilitating the death. He's only the one who puts him over the edge in the end. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira says he's fully responsible for the death over here. So the Gemara answers, B'ktala lo kamayri. We're not dealing with issues of death. We're only dealing with issues of nezek. So that's not going to be a good example. The Mishnah says if you are partially responsible for the facilitation of the nezek, you're fully chayav, liable for it. Well, here it's not about damages. Here it's about death. And so therefore, that's not included in our Mishnah, and that's why they didn't bring this case down. Or v'ivai zema b'lukta lo kamayri. We're not dealing with machlokot. Over here, it's a machlokot Rabbi Yehuda ben Meter and the Chachamim. So Mar says, v'lo, is that really true? The first case that we brought, which is the final one that we say the Mishnah is speaking about, hakimin lo karabi. Before, we said that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi because it's like the Chachamim. So we are dealing with machlokot. The Gemara says, wait, the lo karabi ucharabanan mukminan. What's the alternative to Rabbi? The Rabbanan. Over there, when you have the Rabbim arguing on Rabbi, over here, the Locha is like the Chachamim. So when you make the Mishnah like the Chachamim and not like Rabbi, that's okay. That's not a unreasonable thing. Over here, if you make it Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, v'loka Rabbanan, lo mukminan. Over here, if you're going to pick to set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, that means you're setting it up like a Dat Yachid against the position of the Chachamim. So it makes sense to use it when it's a machloket, and then you favor the majority in the machloket to say that the Mishnah is talking that way. But to say our Mishnah is not in a case where it's authored by one individual, Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, to the exclusion of the Chachamim, that we're not going to do. And that's why we're only left with one case that fits the billing of someone who does a partial facilitation but is held fully responsible. And that is the case of Rabbi and the Rabbanan, which is a person who dug the bore from 9, Nezek and Mita by a shore, just a question of how much damage did you do? Did you do partial damage or did full damage to the shore? Mita da Adam is very different than the Nezek that is done to Adam. So even if you would say that it's not talking about Ketala, that's talking about Ketala of a human being. Ketala of a shore is just an extension of damage. It's just a higher form of damage. What you could argue is that the Gemara gives the second answer, Vibai Thema. That's the second answer. It didn't like the one of Ketala because if you say that they're the same, then you would have to differentiate here. Now the Gemara continues and says, Chavti b'tashlumei nizko. I'm responsible for the payment of the nezek. Chavti b'nizko lo k'tani. It doesn't say that I'm responsible for the damage I did. Ela b'tashlumei nizko. In the payment or the restitution that is needed here. Tanina lahad d'rtanu rabbanan. This Mishnah supports what we know from a braita. Tashlumei nezek melameid. Shabalim mitaplim b'nevela. That teaches you that the carcass is dealt with by the owner of the animal. Menahane mile. How do you know that that is true? So what the Gemara is saying is that the owner deals with the carcass of the animal because all the mazik has to do is make him whole. What do you mean make him whole? If he killed the animal and the animal's dead now, make him whole means he's got to replace the animal fully. Now what do you mean to make him whole? The only way you can make him whole is if you say that the balim still have some value left here. How did the balim have some value left here? They are responsible for the nevela, the carcass that's there. So what you have to do is say, the animal is worth this much alive, it's now dead, and you have a carcass here that's worth something. The mazik only pays the differential between the live animal and the carcass. The balim get the carcass, and that is part of the payment for the damage that's done. Or I mean, that's not part of the damage that's done, because it still has residual value to it. Menahani mile, where do we learn this from? I'm Rabbi Ami Damar Kra, Makad Nefesh Bei, Ma Yishal Mena. It says that person who hits an animal will have to pay for it. Al tikri yishal mena, ela yashli mena. Don't read it as that he will pay for it, but rather, he will make him whole. He'll make restitution in this case. Make him whole means that whatever value is left, you don't pay for. You only pay for the differential between the original value and the value that remains over here. So that's this idea that the nevela, the carcass, is the responsibility of the owner. Now, Tosfot points out over here that this is not a broad drasha, because you have balabor yishalem. Over there we don't say balabor yishalem, which means he makes up the difference. Ein deal drosh yishalem yashlim. Aval yashlimeno mashma shabema atzma yishalem. It says it's unique to this one case that we're quoting from Sefer Vayikra, which is there it says, zmake beima yishalmena. Makes it sound like the animal itself will make the restitution over it. He'll be paying something. How does the animal pay for something? That doesn't make any sense. V'zeyef shark shvar meta, because it's already dead. So how does the animal pay for something if it's dead? Ella, what's the explanation? The animal is paying for something here. Its carcass is paying for a part of the damage. So Tosfot says it's unique to the Yishalmen over there, where it makes it sound like the behemoth is contributing to the payment. Well, the animal is contributing to the payment because the nevela is a part of that compensation. So Rav Kana Amar Miocha, it's from here. Im Tarof Yitaref Yivyehu Eid Hatrefa Lo Yishalem. It's talking about a Shomer Sachar. The Shomer Sachar is Patur for Onsim. But something that happens that he couldn't control. Here, if you have wild animals that come and then tear up part of the flock, Im Tarof Yitaref, if it was attacked by wild animals, Yivyehu Eid, he brings witnesses, he brings evidence of the fact that that was the case. Hatrefa Lo Yishalem. Then he doesn't have to pay for the trefa. Ad trefa yishalem. The Gemara makes the drasha now rather than aid, but ad trefa yishalem. Trefa atzma lo yishalem. Over there, it's a little strange because there the pasuk is telling you patur. It says a trefa lo yishalem. But then the deal is that when you do have to pay for the trefa, then it's only ad trefa yishalem. That only until the point of the trefa you will pay. The trefa itself you will not pay. In essence, the carcass stays with the owner and you only pay up to the trefa. So they're playing on the word aid and saying that it's really ad trefa yishalem. They're reparsing the pasuk to say, tarof yitaref yivyehu ad trefa yishalem. So in the case where it was ripped up and he's responsible, until the trefa he will pay. Although the Rabbeinu Hananel reads it directly into the words of the pasuk, which is, tarof yitaref yivyehu aid ha trefa lo yishalem. And that's what he says. The trefa you don't pay for. Mehad, trefa lo yishalem, klomar, mashayta sheveh, ad shenaseh trefa lo yishalem. That he takes the pasuk literally and says that you don't pay for the trefa. And that's why the mazik is patur for the amount of the nevela, because you don't pay for the trefa. Chizki amar meyochel. Chizki says it's from this pasuk. Vameit ielo. The source is from the pasuk by Ashur shenagach at Ashur. It says, onoda kishor nagachu mitmol shulshom lo yishmenu balav shalem yishalem. Shor tachat shor, v'meit yelo. V'meit yelo. L'nizak, that goes to the damagee, to the party who owns the animal. V'chein tani de bechizkia, v'meit yelo, l'nizak. It goes to the party that was damaged. Atamir l'nizak, v'eino lo l'mazik. It says, v'meit yelo, it's a dangling modifier. It says, lo, to him. Who is to him? Is to him the owner of the animal, or to him the owner of the boar? So, amart lo kachaya, wasn't that the case? My lo kachaya. What does that mean? If you tell me that the nevela belongs to the mazik, then all you have to say is, you're responsible to replace the shore, and write nothing else. Why do you have to add in the meiti elo? Because I would have known that it all goes to the mazik. I mean, if you say shore tachat shore, that means that the mazik now has got to replace the shore entirely. So of course then the carcass goes to him because he's making full replacement of the shore. But if you say, I made the ELO, then that's telling you new information that you wouldn't have known. Well, I made the ELO is not contributory over here in explanation that it belongs to the mazik. The only thing I made the ELO can be contributing to towards is that it belongs to the nizak. Therefore you have to interpret I made the ELO to mean that it belongs to the nizak. Shmamina, the nizak. It must be the nizak, because if it was the mazik, the one who did damage, then all you have to say is short takat shor, and you wouldn't have to mention anything. The fact that you added in a meiti elo must be it's referencing to the other party, the nizak, and the meiti elo. Now, this truthfully has to do with two views in when you make restitution for nezek, what are you trying to do? When you do damage to an individual, you've done two things. First of all, you've created a diminution in the value of the object or in the possessions of this individual. But you've also taken away something from this individual. So now when you're repairing and you're trying to rectify the nezek, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to bring him back basically the object that he had before? That would be this idea of shor tachat shor. Shor tachat shor says he had a shor before. We want you to get him a shor again. Or are you just simply trying to make him whole for the damage that's done? So here in the Havamina versus the Maskana, it seems that the Gemara is moving to those two different views of restitution or reparations that are paid. In the first case, it says shor tachat shor. If you just wrote shor tachat shor, it'd be clear that the nevela goes to the mazik because he has to provide him with a new shore. He ruined the shore. He's got to provide a new shore here. Basically, you've got to bring him back to where he was before or replace the item completely. On the other hand, if you read it based on the maskana, the meiti elo, the carcass goes to the balim. And that all the mazik has to do now is make up the differential between the value of the carcass now and the value of the animal before. That sounds like the reparations are just coming to fill or plug the loss that was done here, not to bring him back to his former state. Betzricha, and we need all three of these limudim. If you only had that pasuk, mishum delo shchicha, that's not a common case. People going and hitting animals and doing damage to animals, that's not a common case. About trefa, the shchicha, trefa, we have wild animals that attack the flock. That's something that's common. Amalo, say over there that the nevela would be the mazik, and not the nizak. So therefore I need the case of trefa. So therefore it's shchicha. Bishmein and trefa, you told me about the case of trefa, mishum de memela. Because there it happened by itself. The shomer didn't do the damage to the animal. A wild animal came and did the damage. Now, he might be responsible because he should have guarded, he should have protected the animal. That's why over there we say that the carcass goes to the balim because the shomer didn't do it directly. Aval makeh beima, to be a daim, when you hit the animal, where you're physically doing the damage to the animal, emelo over there say that the carcass is the mazik's problem, not the nizak's problem, or the owner of the shore's problem. If you told me these two, ha-mishum de lo shchicha, ha-mishum de memela, you would have said the reason in each of these cases there's a kula and the nevela goes to the nizak or to the baal of the nevela is because one of them is not common. That's the case of makeh beima yishomenu. And one case happens without direct contact with the animal, which is the trefa. Aval v'ameiti elo, by the case of boar, the shchicha, it's something that's common that an animal will be damaged or killed by a boar in the Shuter Abim. Ubi Adayim. And it's as if you did it be Adayim. This is a very difficult line in the Gemara. Amalo. Let's say that that's not the case. So Rashi says here that Mishtai B'Shor Shinagach, the Shchiach, that's a common occurrence, which is interesting in of itself that Bameti Yelo, that he's talking about Shor. The Bameti Yelo is also written by Boar. By Boar already we said Hezekah Matsui. That's something that is common. By sure, to say Shor Shenagach is Matsui, that's a little difficult. But the more difficult statement in Rashi is that it's Biyadayim, which is, Ubiyadayim hu mamash. It's as if he did it with his own hands. Shashor shu mamano shu mazik. The shore which is your possession, nitkaven mazik, did it intentionally. Since the animal did it intentionally, it's as if you did it Biyadayim. You can see over here that the Marshal eliminates this from the Girs of Rashi. Because that's a very extreme idea. Your property that does damage, even though it intends to do damage, becomes as if you did it biyadayim. Because there, by sure, you have kavanatol azik, it intends to do damage. And since you didn't watch it, now you become responsible as if you did it with your own hands. It's an amazing chiddush in Rashi to say biyadayim. Now, obviously, he's dealing with the Gemara, which says biyadayim. So you have to explain what it means, biyadayim. So the machloket and the gears in Rashi revolves around, why is it called yadayim? Is it yadayim because it's your mamon that did damage, and as if you did it biyadayim? Or is it biyado because nitkaven lazik? Because the shore intended to do damage, and that's why it's called biyadayim. By boar, it's a little easier to explain, because biyadayim is you dug the boar. And since you dug the boar, to say that is biyadayim, that could be something that you could explain as biyadayim. Rav says, v'yashmina meiti elo, if it just told us v'ameiti elo, mishum de memona kamazik. Because it's his possession that's doing damage. V'ahocha de begufa mazik. Over here, where you yourself are causing the damage, whether it's because you weren't shomer properly, or it's the case by you're hitting the animal, you're the one who's doing the damage, aim low. Say over there that the nevela wouldn't belong to the nizak, but rather to the mazik. Tzricha, that's why I need all three psukim, even though, as Tosfot points out, if you had a tzara shaveh between two of them, you could have done this, you could have had this limud, but the Gemara doesn't go through that process to show you that you could do this. So I'm there of Kran of the Rav. It's only because the Torah wrote Meiti Elo that we say the Nizak gets the Nevela. Had it not been for that, it would have gone to the Mazik. It says, had it not been for that, we would have said that the Nevela goes to the one who did the damage. Wait a minute. The Mazik is allowed to pay damages. We already came to the conclusion from Rav Pup and Rav Huna Breit Rav Yeshua that Meitav means either Kesef, Meitav Aretz, or any metaltolin that you could sell. So what happens if this guy's got a bunch of carcasses in his yard? and he wants to now pay the nezek. He can take those three carcasses and pay him. That's called meitav. That's called metaltlim. You're allowed to use them. So how could you tell me that the Torah is coming to tell us that the carcass belongs to the nizak and then a mazik? Even if you gave it to the mazik, you could just hand it back to the nizak and say that's part of your payment. There's no chiddush in the fact that it goes to the nizak because the mazik can use it as a form of payment. If you can use it as a form of payment, of course it goes to the nizak because the mazik, even if you hand it to the mazik, you just hand it straight back to the nizak as his payment. Damar mar yashiv rabot shvei kesef. That yashiv comes to include things that are cash equivalents, metaltalin, vafilu subin, didei mi boyi. If you can give even the brand the worst of your crops and give it as long as it's metaltalin, you have to tell me in a case that it's the day being by, if it's his own, that he can't give it? Meaning that, what's the question here? Of course it belongs to the nizak. Because there, then it's his own animal, of course he gets the carcass. If the guy can give other carcasses that he has in his refrigerator, he can hand to this guy, then certainly the carcass from this incident, he can give to him. So, no nitzrachal lepchat nevela. So you need it here for the diminution in value of the nevela. Which is that, who is responsible for that diminution in value? The animal died at the time of the nezek. You're not going to show up in court for a while. Between the time that the damage was done and the time you show up in court, the nevela declines in value. And as Tosfos points out of here, the guy's got to sell it right away. The other cases where the animal was damaged and you can't get it fixed right away because you want to know how much it was weakened, how much it was damaged. So over there you can make a claim that if it deteriorates over that time, it's the mazik's problem. Because the nizak doesn't want to get it fixed or he needs time before he can go take it to the doctor, that's fine. In this case, there's no reason to keep the nevela around. You should sell it right away. The nevela is not valuable to the case. It's only valuable for its monetization. So therefore, you should have sold it right away. You didn't sell it right away, that's the nizak's problem. And he loses the money, the diminution in value between the time it died and the time that you come to din, that's the problem of the nizak. And that's what a meiti yelet teaches you. The meiti yelo teaches you that the nizak is responsible for that diminution of value and not the mazik. Where it says, lema pchat nevela tnaihi. Let us say that pchat nevela, who's responsible for it, is actually a machloka tanaim. Titania. We have a brighter. Im tarof, yitaref, yuveyu aid. What does that mean, yuveyu aid? Yaveyadim, shenitrafa, bonus. Let him bring evidence to the fact that these animals were attacked by wild animals that he couldn't have controlled. And therefore he's off the hook. Let him bring aid means aidim. Upator. And then he'll be exonerated. Again, this is a shomer sachar. Abba sha'olomer yavi aduda lebeitin. He'll bring the corpse to beitin. My love, ha'ikamithlegate. This is what they're arguing about. The marsava pchat nevela denizak havi. That the pchat nevela belongs to the nizak. Umarsava the mazik havi. The other one says it belongs to the mazik. If you have to bring aidim, then we're not worried about the value of the nevela at all. Since we're not worried about the value of the nevela, because it belongs to the mazik. And it's the mazik's problem to deal with it. On the other hand, if you throw the problem, pchat nevela, to the nizak, then we need an assessment of the value at the time of death, and not currently. So why does he have to bring the carcass to the beit din right away? Because he needs an assessment of what it's worth right now. So that's why Abba Shaul agrees, if he's a ones, that he's patur. Everybody agrees that if he's an ones, he's a patur. The only question is, how much compensation does he need to make? The Tanakhama, according to this, sees me, he has to make full reparations, full compensation for the entirety of the animal, because the carcass is his, and it's his problem. You don't need Beit Din involved with it. The other hand, according to Abba Shaul in this explanation, then you have to bring the carcass to court, because you only have to make reparations for the difference in value between the live animal and the carcass at the time of the death, the time of damage. So he's got to drag the carcass quickly to the court to get an assessment so that he knows how much to pay. That's Abba Shaul, and that's why you have to bring it to court. And the Tanakam belongs to the Mazik, therefore you don't need to bring it to court because it's irrelevant how much the nevela is worth. The Mazik's going to pay the full value of the shor. He can do whatever he wants with the nevela. We don't care what it was worth at the time.
Should just know that the Rabbeinu Chananel learns the Machloka just the opposite way, saying that the fact that Abba Shaul requires you to bring it to Beit Din to assess it at that point in time shows you that it's the Mazik's problem until then. And therefore, Abba Shaul is the one who thinks that the Pchat Nevela is the responsibility of the Mazik, and the Chachamim or the Tanakama believe just the opposite.
So the Gemara says, Lo, the Kuli Amma the Nizak. Everybody agrees that the Pchat Nevela is the Nizak's problem. V'acha b'torach Nevela kamiflegei. They're arguing about who has to deal with the Torah and the Nevela. As Rashi says, "Avir la'viyah mi makom shemeita sham and makom shaita sham." One who has to drag it, who has to pay for the transport costs to get the Nevela from here to there.
So who's responsible for that? Yes, the diminution in value from the nevela rotting, that's a nizak's problem. But who is responsible to get it from the place that it's meita, either to the place where it can be sold or to the Beit Din in order to get an assessment? Who's responsible for those transportation? That's the machloket over here. And that's what Abba Shaul said, Yavi Aduda. He's got to bring it. The mazik's got to bring the corpse in. The mazik is responsible for the transportation costs, whereas the chamim think that the nizak is responsible for the transportation costs. Okay, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph.